All right, so I don't know where to put it, so I'll just dump it on my blog. I was just watching the video of a spider crawling all over the Pope. You seen this video? It's amazing. And he doesn't notice it. The spider comes up to his face and the whole bit. It's just and the Pope is wearing a very simple robe. And so it's really easy to follow the spider's progress as he kind of lands and then crawls all over the Pope. They said after they could even see the spider after the Pope left, that the spider survives the encounter, unlike the fly and President Obama. But I'll put it on my blog here coming up in just a second. We've got some crypto news to get to, a lot of it before we do open lines this hour. So if you want to grab a line right now, you're certainly welcome to. You'll find more. I'll get the blog up eventually this hour, and you can find all the numbers you need at coasttocoastam.com. And then about an hour from now on Coast to Coast, we'll be talking with the author of the book called Decoding the Heavens. It's the book about the Antikythera mechanism. Antikythera? Yeah, that's what I should be saying. Antikythera mechanism. The Antikythera mechanism. This is an amazing discovery. Or should we say rediscovery? A lost discovery, if you will. Think of it this way. If by some weird chance some sponge divers hadn't found a wreck in the Mediterranean, we never would have known about this ancient computer. It was one of the last things that was pulled up off of this shipwreck that had some statuary on it. Several other items from this shipwreck, which had been discovered around the year 1900 by some sponge divers, are still featured pieces in one of the biggest national museums in Greece. But it took them decades to figure out what was in the box. What was this ancient computer? What did it do? Was it a clock? Was it something they were using on the ship? Was it something to predict, you know, somehow the path of where the stars were going to be so that they could guide the ship at night? I mean, what was it? And now what we know is, or at least part of what we know, is that this mechanism, this ancient computer, this hand-built, this beautiful piece, had no antecedent. There was nothing that had come before it that we have any record of that was anything like it. So here is this box. Here's this complicated computer that has 72 working parts and gears and, you know, is set up on this very elaborate system in a very small space. And there's nothing that comes before it. There's no prototype for it. There's nothing that looked like it. There was nothing that anybody was writing about that described it. It just simply appears. And then it's gone in this shipwreck. And in human beings, us, we come up with nothing as complicated as that for well over 1,000 years. And perhaps the most complicated mechanism we come up with after this thing that went down 2,000 years ago on this ship, the most complex piece of machinery we come up with won't be for until some 1700s clock. So some clock in the 1700s. That's it. It's just, and what could it do? Well, we'll get to that coming up next hour, too. Well, the book is called Decoding the Heavens. We'll talk with our guest, Joe Marchant, on the way. Also, before we get to open lines, update on the Panama Monster, the world's worst household gadget, what Olivia Newton-John saw on a summer night that was physical and yet kind of magic, and, you know, not to mention Barney Fife, even Barney Rubble could figure this one out next as we do crypto news on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So lots to get to when we do crypto news here in just a second. Like the fact that the phones are ringing already for open lines. And, you know, I didn't do any last week, so it'll be fun to do it tonight. Hope you don't mind. Always like the show when we can start that way. Make lots of notes about cool stuff going on. Okay, so I put up on the blog here, and I'll get it on the website in just a moment. This is a video of a spider crawling on the Pope. Pretty amazing. And he never loses a word in the speech, even as you watch the spider go crazy. Hey, let's play Murder, She Wrote, okay? For some reason, no police agency has been willing to call the death of that U.S. census worker, Bill Sparkman, a murder, at least as of last report tonight. So let's review the known testimony. Big Creek, Kentucky, right near the lovely Daniel Boone National Forest, where I once spent the night a couple years ago, about halfway between Lexington, Kentucky, and Knoxville in Appalachia, that I love. The 51-year-old part-time census worker was found hanging in a rural Kentucky cemetery, naked and gagged. It's very sad. Now, police have been holding out the possibility that Bill Sparksman's death could have been a suicide or an accident, even though, you know, because his feet and his hands were both bound with duct tape. How do you do suicide and do your hands? All right, let's say he did, and they did, I don't know, but anyway. Authorities have also said the word fed was scrawled with a felt-tip pen across the man's chest, but they're unwilling to say whether or not he was a victim of anti-government bias, or even if the killer, if there is one, and I'm guessing yes, was aware that Sparkman worked for the U.S. Census. Now, the government says they're not willing to say for sure that they knew that the killer knew the victim worked for the U.S. Census, even though the U.S. Census identification tag that Sparkman had was found taped to his head and his neck. It was duct taped to his head and neck. Jerry Weaver of Fairfield, Ohio, told the Associated Press on Friday that he was among a group of relatives who made the gruesome discovery on September 12th. The only thing he had on was a pair of socks, Weaver said, and they duct taped his hands, his wrists. He had duct tape over his eyes. And they gagged him with a red rag or something. And they even had duct tape around his neck. Now, the scene left Weaver without any doubt how Sparkman died. He was murdered. There's no doubt, he said, but police are unable to say that. Weaver said the body was about 50 yards from a 2003 Chevrolet S10 pickup truck. He said Sparksman's clothes were in the bed of the truck. The tailgate was down. I thought but it could have been killed somewhere else, and they brought him here and hanged him for display, or they actually could have killed him right here. It was a bad, bad scene, said the witness. It took me three or four good nights to sleep. My 20-year-old daughter ended up sleeping in the room in our bedroom. So how could any investigating agency argue that this is the worst case of suicide that I've ever seen? There must be a reason. I mean, Shaggy and Scooby wouldn't even need Velma to determine a cause of death. Murder in the worst degree. Scrappy-Doo could solve this. How sad for his family, of course. We should always be mindful of that. O fellowship divine, we feebly struggle, they in glory shine. For all are one in thee, for all are thine. Alleluia, alleluia. So that having been settled, what could have been the motive? Anti-census paranoia? Misplaced anti-government craziness? Sparksman's accidental discovery of a meth lab or a drug distribution point? Perhaps a mistaken belief that this part-time census taker, teacher, and family man was somehow a secret revenue agent who came across some old-timers still? Like the song says, some people never come back from Copperhead Road. Now, the motive alone remains a mystery for now, I believe, and I fear that the longer it takes, the harder it will be to find the killers in all those hills and hollers of that beautiful ancient landscape. Speaking of updates, though, remember the Panama Monster mystery from last week? I'll put a link up on my blog here if you missed it, but I wish I had a bigger update for you, but here goes what I've been able to find out. According to many of my favorite bloggers, the creature in question is some kind of animal, not an alien, as they've been analyzing the video of the Panama Monster from last week. Now, as much as I would love to report to you that it turned out to be Jar Jar Binks, wouldn't that be great? Lauren Coleman's Cryptomundo is clearly coming down on the side that the Panama Monster is a newborn or perhaps diseased animal of unknown origin. Lots of people are saying it's definitely an animal. I think it looks like a kind of sloth, of which there are many in Central America. But quién sabe? Lauren Coleman did have a photo of the decomposing carcass, however, and I have put that on my blog, and you can go take a look at it in just a second. It's supposedly an updated photo of the Panama Monster in a state of decomposition. Look at that and see if it doesn't look like a sloth. Anyway, I'll give you an update soon on the radio when I know one. By the way, the shower radio has been named the worst household gadget of all time. I completely agree. It faced stiff competition from the electric nail file and electric candles, which made up the top three. This was a survey of 3,000 women carried out by an insurance company in England. The shower radio was revealed to have the host of design flaws. Did you ever have one? It's terrible sound quality, and not to mention poor reception, and the water actually did get to it, so it didn't work well. I never had any luck with shower radios. I gave them as presents the year they first started becoming popular, and everybody hated them. I've never had a present rejected by so many people. It got me wondering whether C. Crane has ever done a shower radio, because they do everything else right, and they do. Son of a Gun, it's right there on their catalog online. I'll put a link up to that on my webpage, too. C. Crane, world's first serious water-resistant radio. It's the Sanjian H201. Doesn't sound tinny and hollow like other shower radios. And you can hang it from your shower head by its curved, tracked, quirky handle. Or you can just, carry it in and out, either way. I'm ordering one. I hope you get one, too. But here's my thought. Don't call me if you're naked, though. Because that would make two of us, and that would be weird, I think. Speaking of great inventions, remember a few weeks ago when researchers claimed to be able to tell the year that migration from Africa, the human, early human migration happened from Africa. Egyptologists are now doing that one better. The Egyptians started building the Great Pyramid of Giza. Are you ready for this? On August 23rd in the year 2470 BC. August 23rd. They're pinpointing the exact date. A team of Egyptian researchers arrived at that date because of calculations of the historical appearances of the star Sothis, today called Sirius. Every year around the same time, the Nile River floods, and the star would rise in the early morning sky after a long absence. Quote, the appearance of the star indicates the beginning of the inundation period for the Nile. That, according to Egypt's Supreme Council of Antiquities former head. Throughout their history, Egyptians started their main buildings, the tombs and the temples, at the beginning of the inundation, an auspicious time since floodwaters brought fresh soil, maintaining the region's fertility. In addition, pharaohs always started building their tombs at the starts of their rules. So Khufu, the pharaoh meant to be buried in the Great Pyramid, took power in 2470. So researchers therefore compared the modern calendar, the ancient Egyptian calendar, and the cycle of the star to find the exact date that Sothis would have appeared that year. And by the way, I asked and I was told that August 23rd, 2470 BCE, was a Tuesday. That's what it said. Of course, they didn't call it, Tuesday in ancient Egypt. It was known then as Tut's Day. Of course, I'm making that up. I have no idea what it was called, but I do know what the Egyptian week used to be, and that was 10 days. 10 days for a week before you got to the weekend. Glad it's not like that now. I think the audience of my weekday radio show is already sick of me by Friday. Good news for Coast to Coast listeners is I would only be on three times a month if the the calendar were 10-day weeks. Finally, gene therapy holds promise in the treatment of cancer as well as a large number of other diseases. Developing a scalable system for delivering genes to cells both efficiently and safely has been challenging. Now, a team of researchers have developed a versatile new nanotechnology using nanodiamonds. as a novel gene delivery technology. I'm fascinated by it. I'll put a link up to that, too, on my blog. If you can't quite picture how big a nano diamond is, just look at my wife's original wedding ring. It was all I could afford. The guy at the pawn shop where I bought it said she'd love it no matter what. And I guess he was right because, you know, she's been hopelessly devoted to me ever since. Which reminds me about Olivia Newton-John. So the star of Grease, Olivia Newton-John, has revealed that she's fascinated by unidentified flying objects. She's even seen a UFO. The 60-year-old star claimed that she spotted a UFO when she was just 15. She said, "I've seen one when I was very young. It was unidentified, and it was flying. Ergo, UFO." The star of Xanadu also recalled how the brilliant silver object flew across the sky at amazing speeds. "That means that it flew almost as fast as I did when I left the theater after showing Xanadu." By the way, here's a fun movie fact. Actor Joe Mantegna had a small role in Xanadu that was left entirely on the cutting room floor. I wonder how much that cost him. Let's get to some open lines and take this up to the top of the hour when we'll be talking about the Antikythera mechanism. I got to learn to pronounce that right. An amazing early computer that appears out of nowhere and then is gone and isn't rediscovered until accidentally around 1900. We're still finding out what it can do. We'll talk about that coming up next hour. Chris is in Rialto, California on Coast to Coast AM. Chris?
Hi, Ian. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Thanks for getting us started.
Okay. I was just wondering, you know, I've been hearing a lot of things about the FEMA camps. And I was wondering if you're ever going to have a guest on that kind of explains a little bit about that and what they plan on doing with all.
I think Alex Jones has come on a few times and talked about that. Yeah, with George.
You know, I've listened to him, but you know, I kind of wanted somebody, you know, a little bit has a little bit more background with some type of government working and stuff. I mean, Alex Jones has a lot of information, of course, but I was kind of hoping to be someone with a little bit more government knowledge.
I don't know many other people that believe it. I mean, there's Alex Jones and there's a few others that think that it's, you know, that it's happening, that FEMA is building these camps to incarcerate, you know, Americans. But some of the pictures that have been shown on the web, for example, turn out not to be FEMA camps. They turn out to be other things. And so, I mean, sometimes you can't choose your witnesses, you know, I don't know that we can make somebody appear that can do that has a government experience that can back that up, but I'll certainly propose it, and we'll see if we can find somebody. Alex Jones, and there's two or three others that are tracking the story, and we'll see if any of them have anything new on that. I'm sure George will get that, too. He's been following the story very closely. In Hartford, Connecticut, where I was not too far from just last week. I was in New London, Connecticut last week, Rufus. Rufus joins us east of the Rockies. Rufus?
Yes, I just want to call you guys. It's the first time I've been on here, and it's a real pleasure. I want to know if any of you folks have been hearing about the portals that NASA has found. There's a portal that opens up above us every 8 minutes, and it's on the NASA.com. And if you go to it, you can download on MP3 about these portals. And what it seems to be, there's a portal that opens up every 8 minutes above us. It's a cylinder. It's about the size of our planet Earth, and it's connected to our sun.
I just went to NASA.com, and I see North American Search Authority.com. Is that what you're saying it is?
No, it's about the portals.
I've gone to that website. That's not what's there. So I'm at the website you're saying, and I don't see it. So let me look for it during the break and see if I can't track that down. That would be news if NASA were reporting there are portals. Let me check NASA.gov in case it's there. And now you know that's something we'll just hang out for just a moment. We'll see what more we can find, and what are the things you'll tip us off about. I'm sure it'll be a lively hour. And then also, too, coming up, an update on last week's guest. Got to tell you more about that. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. So I looked at it, and those are the numbers for open lines. Hope you grab them between now and the top of the hour. And I went to go find, the last caller said, if you go to NASA.com, there's all this information about a portal that keeps opening up every 8 minutes. I can't find that. What I can find at NASA.gov, which is the official HQ site, right, for NASA, is that there's something they call the NASA portal, but it's a newsletter. You can download it, just like the caller said, but as far as I can tell, it's a video newsletter, and it has all sorts of updated information on it, but it's not like a time portal or anything. But I'm looking, and I did go back to NASA.com, like you said, and I couldn't find anything there, other than it's a collection of pictures taken from, like Google Earth pictures and Google satellite photos of your house and stuff like that. And you can find that at the North American Search Authority. That's what that's called. And I don't know if there's any money involved, but that's one of the website's names. So we'll keep looking, and you keep them coming. Open lines coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, I put a photo up on my blog at coasttocoastam.com. You can go take a look at that. It's an updated image on the Panama Monster. You might have heard about that earlier in the week, too. But this is from Lauren Coleman's Cryptomundo. It indicates a creature that is decomposing and looks like it has hooks for feet and hands, which goes back to, could it be a sloth theory, especially with that long body and those sort of distended arms? I'm not sure. But amongst the many things you can go do, too, at coasttocoastam.com, when you click onto the blog there, there's also a couple interesting links. And if you want to answer to any of those questions, you can certainly grab an open line now. While we have one or two, and let's start with international line. Joe is in Cancun on Coast to Coast. Joe?
Yes. Yes.
Go ahead, Joe.
No, I was just curious. I haven't heard a lot of talk about the Genesis 6 Giants. And when that last caller was talking about the portals, Stephen Quayle, when he was on, talked a lot about that. And I was just curious if there was...
when he was on talking about... You mean Stephen Quayle was talking about the Giants?
Right, in the Genesis 6, about in the Bible, and it talks about in the days of Noah how... those days will, reappear and things like that. He talked about, portals holding giants and a lot of that back. But I'll hang up here and just let you talk about it.
It's the Nephilim is what you're talking about. And I haven't heard anything on the Nephilim lately, although I was reminded of it when I was thinking about some previous guests we've had on who had talked about upcoming revelations about giants in the jungle, particularly in not too far away from you, if you're in Cancun, Mexico. I believe that there was some discussion about giants having been found in the jungle in Mexico off the Yucatan Peninsula, and that they would reveal themselves sometime in the next couple of years. That was a comment that was made a couple of years ago. So now we're right at that time when, if they're going to reveal themselves, now would be that time. I think that'd be amazing. And in fact, I've been told that if you knew right where to look on Google Earth, you'd be able to see from space a clearing that is made in the Yucatan jungle, where you would be able to see the clearing that was made by the giants. That if you can click onto it and if you can find it, obviously they're not going to be Google Earthed in the sense of being able to see them from a street side view or something like that, but you can at least see that much. But yeah, we're overdue. And I was just thinking about that the other day. If that exists, it'd be great to know about it. Trish is in the San Fernando Valley, first time caller line on Coast to Coast open lines. Trish?
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I call because I know these people. I'm a nurse, and there is a something on YouTube that these people actually can heal third degree burns, and they have a little 5-minute video.
Who are these people?
There's this man. He's in Switzerland, and he has a long distance healing abilities, and he's taught these other people how to do this too. And they set up a hotline and this video. In fact,
well, you're a nurse and a doctor. Don't you heal third degree burns?
No, I don't have that ability. I do not, but these people do. And
okay.
I have seen it work because I knew about this and I went into work and about a little bit before I got to work, they had got a call. This man had got a call that his stepson had just had a third degree burn happen with his on his hands.
So, what do we look under in on YouTube?
It's called, you write in a free fire burn test.
Free fire burn test.
Yes.
Okay. And it says instant burn recovery. And is that what you're saying? Is that
yes.
it?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Uh-huh.
Well, there you go. I'll take a look at that. And it says this is a fire chief's appeal to help. Fire victims is what it says here in the description. I'll go take a look. Instant burn recovery, free fire burn tests. If that's it, that'll tell us more. And we'll know if that'd be interesting. If they've come up with a new method for that, that might be a future Coast to Coast guest. David, west of the Rockies in L.A. on Coast to Coast. David?
Hello, Ian.
Hello.
Yeah, just been a long time since we've spoken. Your favorite Packer backer here, also hoping that Brett Favre wins his second Super Bowl ring with purple number 4.
It was an interesting week last week. I know it must have been a heartbreaking loss for you, the Packers there at the last second like that.
Hey, it happens. You know, when the Packers went through the losing years, I learned to appreciate a lot of teams. Packers are not everything in football. There's a lot of good teams out there.
All right.
I've rooted for Minnesota many times. Anyway.
Well, thank you. That's more than I can say I've ever rooted for the Packers. But, you know, I hate the Packers. I love Packer fans. So that's how I live with that. But,
well, what I've learned about the Packers since I left Green Bay, I can't blame you. But, well, the Packer fans at the stadium, what I'm saying. Anyway, Ian, what I wanted to get into was this poor fellow who was murdered, and I think it was in Kentucky, and
right.
was spread all over his body. You know, he is running the census.
He was just taking a census,
right.
Part-time census worker in rural Kentucky. Yep, and his hands were duct tape, his feet were duct tape. He had Fed scrawled on his chest. His eyes were duct tape. He had his U.S. Census tag duct taped to his face, and they're not willing yet to call this one a murder. Right.
Right. Of course they're not willing to call them. Murder. I mean, hell, this was muskrats got to him.
Yeah, muskrats got to him.
Anyway, I was thinking, looking at these bailouts, I can understand a lot of people's anger at the Fed, the Federal Reserve,
mm-hmm.
these bailouts. You know, we bailed out Chase Manhattan. We bailed out Citibank. We bailed out... Bank of America. There's so many banks were bailed out. But yet I also realized here recently that many small regional banks were also forced to take a bailout. And I look at this and I ask myself, you know, how many times in law, we see this in movies and I know it happens in real life too, in discovery. If one side is looking for a specific piece of paper that another side right. has, they don't want the other side to have, they'll bury them with 10,000 pieces of paper, send it all over to the opposing team, hoping that they don't find the needle in the haystack. And I'm asking myself, in this Fed bailout, forcing all these small regional banks to also take a cut and bail out, they didn't need it, but they're forced to take it. What is being covered up here? What's being hidden?
Well, I don't know, the term you're talking about is called a paper blizzard is what that's called when you shoot them every piece of paper and somewhere in there is what they're looking for, but you know it's almost impossible to find it. I don't understand the banks that say they were forced to take it. That actually sort of remains a mystery to me, because there are so many banks who simply refused. And if you could refuse, and there are lists of banks that were, you know, approached to take the TARP money and said no. And then there were other banks that said, oh, they forced us to take it. Oh, woe is me. And oh, we hate this. But then they keep it, where other banks took it and gave it back right away. So I don't know. I can't quite figure out exactly what happened there. So, yeah, you're right. I wish there was a way of determining once and for all. Lots of smaller community banks refused to take part in the TARP funds and could have. Now, I wonder whether some of those smaller community banks or regional banks are now suffering, and therefore now they are looking at having to take the TARP money if such a thing was still available. I don't know. But some of those bank CEOs were my heroes for saying no. If they didn't need it, they didn't take it. That's the way it should have been. David's in Cleveland, Ohio, on Coast to Coast. David?
How you doing today?
Good.
I just wanted to get your opinion on this guy who was taking the sentences. I mean, is anybody surprised that this guy, that all this right-wing fervor and hatred of the government and everything led to murder, you know?
Well, if that's what it is, I mean, that's really what we have yet to figure out, is what the motive is. And could it be that, or could they merely have used that as an excuse to kill?
I mean, right? I'm like this. I see this situation where the right wing took credit for going after Acorn and people on their own, little independent people behind video cameras. But you think they're going to take credit for whoever did this, going after the feds and leading the murder? That's all this hatred leading up to.
I'm not saying there isn't a connection between saying that there's, you know, when you start talking about hatred of the government, or that the census was going to be used to imprison you, and they're, you know, and they're building camps to, you know, they can't wait to put you away in federal camps or to not deny you food or whatever. I could see where there's a connection there, and that may be that someday we might find out that's the defense. If they ever find a guy, you know, that may be the defense. They claim that they were brainwashed into thinking that this census worker was just about to ruin their community and they had to stand up. But we don't know that yet. And in terms of like Acorn, I mean, Acorn slit their own throats. You know, I mean, you can't be doing what you're doing with Acorn and afterwards say, well, it was just a couple of bad seeds, if you will, in Acorn. I think that there was a systemic problem in Acorn, and it wasn't hard to go expose it on videotape. And when you've got an organization that was growing that big, and the funding seemed to be rolling in, and they may have felt like they were bulletproof under the new administration, I think they just discovered the limits of their own ability to train and to maintain the integrity of whatever it is that they were standing for. So I think those are two different things. But yeah, I mean, I think that there are people that went after Acorn and they got him, but Acorn got hoisted on its own petard. I don't think that's quite the same as this census worker, but it would be interesting to see if somebody like, for example, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann were willing to stand up and say, oh, I shouldn't have said what I said about the census. It led to people having a misimpression and murder. I don't think I'll live that long to hear that. Nathan is in Knoxville, Tennessee, not too far away from where that murder happened. And they've yet to call it a murder, of course, Nathan. That's what we talked about earlier. Hey, Nathan, go Vols.
Thank you very much, Ian. And I really appreciate the volunteer comment. I didn't hear anything about the murder itself. But let me just say that I'm a first-time caller. And I love Coast to Coast. You guys are great. You do a very a service to the nation and the community of people with open minds that I don't even have the words to express the thanks that I have for what you
well,
guys
thank
do.
You.
But I just wanted to make a couple of quick comments and / questions.
Okay,
I wanted to know if you had any updates on the Hadron Collider and the schedule as to whether or not they're going forward with that.
You know, I haven't heard lately. That's a great question. I haven't heard anything about it lately.
Also, I wanted to know about the new telescope that was supposed to replace the Hubble and whether or not we are going forward with that as well. As an amateur astronomer, I'm very interested to see, what's going to come of that as well.
Well, I knew that as of last report, I think they were still moving ahead with a new space telescope to replace Hubble, but that Hubble has gone so well and has worked out better than they thought, and they were able to do the upgrade on Hubble, that I think it put off any immediate need to get that up flying right away. So I don't know what the latest is on that. I had heard that because of the success of Hubble, even recently, that they've been able to do those modifications, that there may not be another launch of that anytime soon. But that's the last word I heard. You might be able to Google that sometime soon and see whether or not at the NASA website or space.com. Space.com is a great website to go to for space information. Fizorg.com is also great for science stories. Henry is in Pennsylvania on Coast to Coast. Henry?
Oh, hi. How are you doing?
Good.
I just had to thought I'd bring to the fold. You guys have been talking a lot about UFOs and paranormal stuff, but something that I know very well and is dear to me is the supplement stevia, the plant extract. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, a couple of people I know have done that, yeah.
Okay, and just to bring people up to speed, it's a plant that's native to South America, and
right.
It's 300 times sweeter than sugar and contains no calories.
Right, naturally sweet, yep.
Naturally sweet. It's been used for decades in Japan, okay, as a sweetener, and it hasn't really received the kind of reception here in America. And I think there's a couple of reasons behind that, but one of them being that the sugar interests are so strong, and there's sort of a, I don't want to say a conspiracy, but they're suppressing the use of stevia as a supplement for some reason. I'm not sure why, but it's a very powerful herb, and it can be used in many ways, and the way that I've used it is by blending it in water and drinking it alongside of my daily routine of water. So whatever water I drink is blended with stevia.
Yeah, I mean, you can buy it, right?
You can buy it, but there's restrictions on its inclusion in certain prepared food products because it's only approved as a supplement, if you understand
right.
What I'm saying.
So that'll change, and then it'll be everywhere.
Well, hopefully,
I mean, Coca-Cola.
If you look at the obesity rates and the yeah. levels of our health problems, a lot of it relates to overconsumption of the simple sugars, and it's a big problem.
Well, I would say Stevia's market is not against sugar; it's other artificial sweeteners, right?
Okay,
other non-sugar sweeteners, and those are so dominant that you've got to have. You know, you got to have a marketing campaign to break through that. And I think that's the interesting part, because I know Coca-Cola was behind stevia at one point. I don't know if they still are, but they were. And you got to figure Coca-Cola's they'll be more than happy to spread the word about stevia. It is interesting. I think there's a couple of products on the market that are made of stevia. But will it start appearing more in food? Good question. Well, less high fructose corn syrup is, you know, good with me. In fact, today I was at a meeting. I was at a church meeting, and somebody was serving fat-free half and half. Fat-free half and half. What are the halves? Right? What are the halves? If it's not half cream and half milk, then what? So I don't know. Anyway, so the Antikythera mechanism. What is it? It's amazing history that we're still figuring out. And the future, next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett.